I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is the latest interview in our mayoral series, and joining us today is independent candidate Joseph Hernandez. Joseph Hernandez, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, I think it's fair to say a lot of New Yorkers aren't familiar with you or your platform, New York voters in this race. So we want to ask you first to introduce yourself. What do you want New York voters to know about you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Just by way of background, I am not a politician. I'm a business guy who wanted to do something back, to give something back to the city and to this country. My background is I was born in Cuba. I'm a Cuban refugee. I came here when I was 7 years old. My dad was a political prisoner in Cuba, so I know what socialism and communism looks like. I've experienced it, and I can tell you lots of stories about it, and it's not good. We came here when I was seven. My dad, you know, washed dishes. My mom cleaned homes, and we started from nothing. The American dream started from very, very nothing, from nothing. My parents taught me in this country to work hard because there's no such thing as a free ticket and to get educated. And that was our way out of our situation, and also to love this country. They taught us to love this great country that was giving us a chance. And then they said, at some point in your life, you're going to have to give back to this great society that gave you so much. And so this is my opportunity to give back to this great society. And I'm delighted to be here. I'm a scientist by training. As I said, I'm not a politician. I started my career in the lab, doing research, working in the pharmaceutical industry, developing tests for diagnostics. We developed a test for HPV, which has really transformed the way healthcare is done, especially in women's health. And I've done a bunch of companies. We've done 12 companies, brought five of them public. You know, saw what was going on in this race. And I said, you know what? This is my time. This is that moment my parents were talking about, that I had to stand up and give something back to this great society that gave us so much. So that's why I'm here.
So you first came to Florida, and you grew up in Florida, if I have that right.
I did, yes.
How long have you been a New Yorker? When did you first come to live here?
I came here in 2011. So I've been here since 2011, on and off, obviously during COVID. Took a little hiatus, like I think most of New York City, but been here since 2011 and fell in love with the city. When I first came to the city in 2011, I was brought in by a big private equity guy to help him with his family fund. And my first experience was, oh my God, I've been a New Yorker my whole life. I didn't really realize it.
You just didn't know it yet.
Yes.
A lot of people who come to the city feel that way. Right. The top three candidates in this race, they're pretty much New Yorkers, either born and bred New Yorkers or have been raised here since they were children. Why do you think someone who's more recent to the city is more suited to be mayor than someone who's born and raised?
Well, I will challenge that my love is equal to all these individuals, by the way. My love for the city is genuine. It's a beautiful city. I think it's really, when you look at the diversity of people in the city, we have 170 different cultures in the city. We all seem to get along. We all seem to create greatness. And there's something about the speed, the energy, just the genuineness of New York that I fell in love with. And so I consider myself, while I wasn't born in New York City, I consider myself as big a New Yorker than anybody else on the race. I think I bring different perspectives to it as well. You know, I worked in Silicon Valley. I know what it's like to do startups. I worked in big organizations, big corporations. I know what it's like to run a massive corporation. And by the way, the city is probably a bigger corporation than any company I've been involved with. I mean, we're talking about 300,000 employees, $120 billion budget. This is a massive corporation. I learned how to, you know, be involved with big corporations throughout my career. So I think I bring a lot of different elements to the role of mayor that I think is value add.
You know, let's talk about that first. Business experience is something that people want to bring. A lot of candidates who come into the race want to bring to the city, how to better run the city if you have that experience running a very successful business. Would you allow, though, that it's a pretty different thing running a city of 8.5 million people, of the considerations that would make a city run well as opposed to what just makes a business run well?
Look, efficiency is efficiency. Good people running the operations is the same, whether it's in a city or a corporation. Budgets, how to manage budgets, how to audit, you know, how to make sure that we get value for our money. I think we should be running our cities like businesses, because the truth is, this is an utterly inefficient operation. As I said, we have 300,000 employees. Just to put it into perspective, you know, Google has 120,000 employees. Microsoft has 180,000 employees. The city of New York has 300,000 employees. We run a $120 billion budget, which is a bigger budget than Greece and Portugal and the whole state of Florida. This is a massive corporation. It should be run efficiently. There's no reason why we should have 70 different departments that report to the mayor, each having their own accounting, their own finance, their own HR function. That in a corporation is complete abuse of resources. And I think if we applied business ideologies and efficiency to government, I think we'd be in a better position. I think we'd have the resources to do all the other things that people are talking about doing. This budget is crazy, and the inefficiency is overwhelming. And I think the fact that I know how to run companies, the fact that I know how to run budgets, the fact that I know how to run efficiency, the fact that I'm a technologist. I mean, one part of my campaign, big central role is artificial intelligence, deploying our AI into making the government more efficient. I think these things are, I think the customers, which are ultimately the residents of New York City, want that in their government.
You know, I wanted to ask you, just recently, very recently entered the race in August. Why come to the race so late?
Well, I entered the race, I think we officially entered in July, right around when Madami won the primary. And, you know, to be quite honest, he was a big reason that I entered the race. Primarily, you know, I felt it was important to articulate what it was like to be living in a socialist communist society. I have a visceral reaction to that. I believe in capitalism. I believe in America. I believe in the American dream. I believe in grit and hard work. And I felt that the socialist agenda that Zoran was putting forth was contrary to what I believed in. So that was my opportunity to stand up and do it. We were lucky. I mean, we did get...
You know, actually, I want to talk about that for a minute, for your reasons for entering the race, because affordability is definitely the main issue for voters when it comes to this race. We actually found a stat from, or a fact from the Fund for the City of New York that put out a report that says a person making $100,000 a year in the city is essentially just covering their expenses. It's housing, food, getting by. A person making six figures is essentially living paycheck to paycheck. So affordability, far and away, the biggest issue in this race. And that seems to be why Mamdani's message is resonating so much with so many New Yorkers, you know. But, you know, you and other candidates have had, like you said, like a visceral reaction, and even used words like he might be dangerous for the city. And I noticed that when it comes to his platform, he's not talking about abolishing the rent. He's talking about freezing the rent. You know, he's not talking about abolishing capitalism. So I wonder if a lot of his supporters think that those are things that can make a real difference to affordability. Why call those policies dangerous?
Well, let me take a step back and say that affordability is a real issue in New York City. There's no question about it. I mean, you see it in people who have high incomes. It's a real issue.
Across.
But I think affordability, I think we really have to look at economics and not sort of social experimentation with what really works. And while his message of rent freezing and free buses really work, I think you have to look at the impact that that's going to have. So let's talk about affordability around housing. The reason we have such high expenditure and costs on housing is one of vacancy. New York City has a 1.4% vacancy rate. The national average is 7%. We should really be at that level. And to do that, you have to build about 152,000 new homes, which can be done, by the way. There's a strategy to do that. We've laid one out, which is a three-pronged strategy by using warehouse apartments that exist. There's about 50,000 of those. And by the way, why are they warehouse, you may ask? The reason they're warehouse is because we have, unfortunately, there are...
You mean the rent-stabilized apartments that are being held off, apartments that are being held off market by landlords?
Correct. Yeah, there's about 50,000 of those. And you ask, well, why is that? Well, the reality is that because of government regulation and legislation, we do not allow those people to make a profit on those apartments. So, of course, they're not going to put them onto the market. So we need to incentivize those individuals to put those 50,000 homes that can house single moms that need apartments, you know, new people moving into the city that need apartments, new students getting their internships into the, you know, the first jobs into the city. So we have to deal with that. The other thing is we have a high vacancy rate around offices. So we have about 95 million square feet of empty office space. We should be working with the owners of those buildings to convert that to housing. We can do that pretty efficiently and effectively. And then the last piece of the housing component, which is, again, a big issue of the cost, is the city sits on about 1,400 lots that can be built tomorrow. These are lots that are empty in residential zones, zone residential that can, in fact, be utilized to build new homes. So why don't we work with developers to use those properties and build new homes so that we can reach this level of 132,000 units that we need to bring our vacancy to 7%. If you do that, pricing will be impacted for sure. I mean, the law of supply and demand has applied, works on every element of economics, and it'll work here. The other issue is affordability is around food. And by the way, freezing the rent only freezes the rent to a million rent stabilized.
Right, nearly 2 million
New
Yorkers.
So it doesn't really impact.
But that issue of holding back the apartments by landlords, I think, again, you're running against an issue of what the average renter or the average New Yorker believes, which is that apartments are being held off the market. It might be because there are many landlords who are just looking to make a better profit on that apartment than they would releasing it to the market as it is now.
The apartments are sitting empty. They're not making any money. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've talked to these individuals. They're like, the only reason I can't put those units back on the market is because by code, I have to upgrade these apartments. I have to put new refrigerators, new stove in these units. And if I do that and I'm able to only charge $400 a month in rent, I'm never going to make my money. This is very basic supply and demand economics.
There have been other candidates and mayors who have had the idea of helping those landlords to get those back on the markets. Yeah. How would you make that successful when that hasn't become successful?
Well,
so
I think there, you know, unfortunately the needs are, they varied. They're not, there's not one, you know, a policy that would suit all, but I think we have to build, we have to allocate some resources to bring those units to market, whether they be refurbishing the apartments and providing some sort of granting or loans to these individuals to do that. And you also need, look, you also need to enforce it. It's not just providing cash. I think you need to require that these individuals put these units back on the market. I think it's a double-edged sword, and I think you need to apply both. But that's one element of cost. I mean, the other element is food. You know, food is very expensive in New York City. I have a plan to address that. I think Zoran's plan is to create government-based grocery storage, which have never worked, by the way. One just failed recently here in America. And it doesn't work. I came from that. I remember standing in line hours and hours to get our basic food and bread and eggs.
What's your plan?
My plan is quite simple. My plan is to work with the bodegas, who've supported me, by the way, the Bodega Association. There's about 13,000 of them. They really are the ones that feed New York City. And my plan is to form a co-op, a buying co-op. So the reason why places like CVS and Walmart and these large box stores can give you good pricing is because they buy in bulk. So my strategy is to finance basically a co-op where all these bodegas can buy from this co-op effectively.
Get so that savings. Prices for certain food items or things aren't slightly higher in bodegas than they are in other places.
Absolutely. They are them. Because of this bulk buying challenge that they have. And on average, you save in our analysis is anywhere between 15 and 30% savings across things that you would consume on a daily basis. So my strategy, my plan is to partner with bodegas and say, look, let's split the benefits here. You keep 50% of the profits and the rest you pass on to the residents of our city. That's going to impact cost of grocery stores, grocery items by 15 to 20% immediately.
I want to get to a couple more issues, yeah. So we're going to move on to some of them. Safety is another very big issue right after affordability for New Yorkers in this election. So you have a plan for the NYPD for safety. What's your safety plan for New York City?
Yeah, safety. I think safety, in my opinion, comes before affordability because I think the perception is that the city is unsafe, and the reality is the city is unsafe. I mean, we have almost daily attacks in the subway. We have just recently a gentleman got murdered in the Brooklyn subway for opening a door for a human. I mean, it's insanity what's occurring here, and I think we have a couple of problems. One is. Our police force is being squeezed from a timing perspective. They're overused, overutilized. We don't have enough police officers. So my plan is to bring in 10,000 new police officers to the force. We can do that with the allocated budget that is available on overtime. It's about $1 billion. That gets us about 8,000 new police officers.
You know, let me ask you about that because I want to know where 10,000 additional police officers would be most effective. And you mentioned the subways. Absolutely. And during the Adams administration, there have been surges of police officers into the subways. They, you know, the governor sent down the National Guard at one point. There is still the perception of New Yorkers that the subways are problematic, are trouble for them.
Yeah, for sure.
So if surging the police officers, as we've seen in recent years, doesn't seem to have made a dent in the problem, what are 10,000 more officers? How are they going to be used?
I think if you looked at the historical surging, they've been very temporal. They've been very short-lived. That's number one. Number two, a lot of these police officers are not on the actual train. They're on the stations, most of them. So I would require and encourage police officers to ride the train. I think that's important to be on the actual train. The other element of this is that when you really look at the crimes that happen on the subways, the majority of these crimes are committed by people that jump the turnstiles. Yeah, so we need to do more enforcement there. About 50% of those people have warrants out for their arrest. This is where the crime originates, from these people. So we need to enforce that more aggressively. In terms of police, I think the old-fashioned grid patrolling is important. You know, this is the old-school way of patrolling, where the police officers actually walk the beat. They know their neighborhood. They know the grandmas. They know the kids. They also know the criminals. And that is a very important piece of patrolling. But I think all of this doesn't really work if we don't have good prosecutors. And the problem we've had in the city is that it's been because of the bail reform laws that were signed into law by Cuomo and other laws that really prohibit judges from keeping repeat criminals in jail, which we need to. The reality is that a lot of these crimes that are being committed are people that are multiple crimes offenders. They've committed. So they repeat these offenses and we don't do anything about it. We let them out. So we need to stop that very quickly. And part of my plan is, if the local prosecutor's not going to prosecute these people, I'm going to bring in the federal prosecutors to do that. And they have a high conviction rate, about 90% compared to our 50% in the city. And you don't really get parole in federal prison, and you certainly serve your time full time. So I think we have to be more aggressive about law and order. The other part of this is I want to bring artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence can help us solve.
I do want to get to that for a second, but I do want to stay on the additional police officers who would be on the street. Would these be additional officers and where would they be deployed? In which communities? Would these be like in communities of color, for example, where trust with the police and the community is not very high? And that's an essential issue.
Yeah, no, listen, I think the police has to do a better job at not only hiring police officers that represent the communities they police, but also ensuring that we need to build rapport with the community. I mean, that's utterly important. I think the grid patrolling, the walking the beat really helps that in that regard. I think the more familiarity you have with individuals in your neighborhood, whether they be police or neighbors or your local grocers, your bodega owner, I think that really helps in trust. And I think we need to build trust. But at the same time, look, we need to enforce our laws. The fact is, this city is in disarray. There's no law and order. I mean, police are attacked all the time. People commit crime. There's no repercussions for committing crime in the city. That has to stop. We need to stop. And the plan that Zoran has about reducing the police force and bringing in mental health professionals to intervene, that's a crazy concept.
I want to ask you about that too, because that ties into the conversation we were having about the surging police officers to the subway and the subway platforms. When was the last time you were on the subway and saw police officers present on the cars or present somewhere?
I haven't seen in the cars recently, to be quite honest. I see them more in the stations. And it's sporadic. I mean, I think if you go, I've been at night where there's no police around. Right. And I think part of that has
And a safety issue for a lot of riders is if they see someone in a mental health crisis.
Absolutely.
Who's on their car, who's in a station, who they're not sure if they can feel safe or if it might be some kind of danger. Why is the idea of a mental health team to help someone in a mental health crisis being deployed? Why is that not an idea that could work?
Because I mean, I've been in situations where, unfortunately, these individuals have been having mental crises. And I don't know that you can have a human intervene in that scenario. I think you need to restrain under those scenarios. I mean, I think it's going to be really difficult to have psychiatrists or psychologists talk people down from these situations. I think you need to intervene. And look, at the end of the day, we need public safety for the rest of New York. I mean, I understand these individuals need mental intervention and they need clinical help. And, you know, some have drug addictions and alcohol problems, whatever have you. But the reality is, you know, the police, the duty of the mayor is to protect all citizens. We have to do that. We have to protect the single mom, you know, the young lady who's going to work, who expects safety out of the train. She shouldn't be worried about being pushed into the rails or attacked by some crazy individual. I'm sorry. That doesn't We have a fiduciary duty to the majority of the citizens of New York City, and that requires that we use police force and detain individuals who are committing crime, whether they be in a mental state or not. That is our duty. That is our requirement. That's what we pay taxes for.
I do want to talk more about that, but we have other issues that we want to get to, too, in our limited time. And I wanted to talk a little bit, too, about the immigration policy of the Trump administration. Yes. As it's playing out here in the city. As you know, there have been ICE raids. There have been people showing up for their immigration hearing at 26 Federal Plaza, only to be detained, arrested, put into custody. And I just wanted to know what your opinion is of this reality that's taking place in the city right now, especially in light of the fact that the Supreme Court has just given ICE the ability to detain someone based on their appearance, the language they're speaking, whether or not they hold a low-income job. And what would your response be if you were mayor? How would you work with the Trump administration on that?
Yeah, look, I am an immigrant. I came here, you know, as I said, I wasn't born here. I was born in Cuba. And so I know the struggles of an immigrant. I know what those look like. I mean, we did come here legally, which is, you know, obviously very different than some of the topics we're discussing here. But when you really look at our immigration issues in New York City, so first of all, I'm all about law and order. I mean, there are laws in the book. We have to respect them. I think we have to work with Washington on a lot of these issues. But if you look at our city is in a very unique situation. We have about 750,000 undocumented individuals in New York City. The majority of these people are good, hardworking people. These are people that wake up in the morning, they work in our restaurants, they clean our apartments, they clean our hotels. They're good people, and they just want a chance at the American dream. Now, they got here by not the most rational way. They came here undocumented and violated by the federal law, effectively. So we have to address that. I have a plan. And by the way, of the 750,000 or so, there's about, on average, about 60,000 of those are real criminals. These are people that have committed crimes. They've been arrested. There's clear documentation. It's about 60,000 is the number. We have to remove those people from the city. They don't belong in our city. They cause more chaos than we need. And our resources should not be deployed for individuals that are here under those conditions. So we need to remove that. I have a plan. It's called the Work for the Dream Plan, effectively, for the rest of the individuals that are hardworking, that want a chance at the American dream. The reality is they're here. We can't.
Is your plan a path to citizenship?
It's a path to legal residence in New York City as a start. I mean, I think the plan is to allow these individuals to work, allow them to be part of the system, to identify who they are. We don't know who these individuals are. We have no sense of what their names, whether they have criminality. We need to create a system where we document who they are. We let them work in the New York City. We allow them to pay taxes as residents of the city. We require that they learn the language because they need to assimilate in this culture. We ask them to volunteer so they can provide services back to the city that's giving them an opportunity.
This and would require cooperation with the federal government. You'd have to work with the federal government.
Well, so the plan, let me say one last piece of my plan, and that is that it requires them not to be on government assistance. That is a requirement of my plan for Working for the Dream. And then my intention is to go to Washington, to go to the White House, and create a pilot program here in New York City that allows these individuals to do that for 2 years, effectively a pilot program where it's a probationary period. After the two-year period, if there is no criminality occurred by any of these individuals and they followed the requirements of the plan, that they are then allowed to enter the legal immigration process behind the line, behind everybody else that's been waiting in line. And I think that plan's going to work. The reality is New York City needs these individuals. We cannot survive.
So that brings me back to my question of, with the situation as it is going on now, you know, some mayors in other cities have pushed back on the Trump administration and the policies as they're going. How would you respond as mayor? How would you work with the Trump administration on the fact that these ICE arrests are happening in courthouses and other places around the city?
Listen, I'm a business guy, and I think you have to pick your battles. I think a battle with the federal government is not a smart battle. I can negotiate with Mr. Trump. I negotiate with individuals like him every day on my business dealings. I know what it takes to get deals done. I think that in this situation, picking a fight with the federal government is not smart. I think we agree on one thing, that criminals should not be in our city, especially criminals that are here undocumented, that are committing multiple crimes, that are coming in and out of our judicial system. Those individuals need to go. And I think that is the common ground that I think I have with the administration.
Is that the characterization, though, of the people who are showing up for their immigration hearings?
I don't agree with that, actually. I have to say that the notion of going to a courthouse where people are following the law, they're asked to come there to be in front of a judge. I don't think that's the right mechanism to bring these people to justice, unless they have a bench warrant for their arrest, or unless they commit a crime. But I don't think that's the right environment to do that. I believe that, you know, we should give these people an opportunity. The city needs them. We can't be without these individuals. And again, most of these people are good, law-abiding, hardworking people. We should give them a chance. We really should.
I want to get to your platform on AI that you mentioned earlier, because we promised we'd come back around to it. Part of your platform is to use AI for infrastructure and safety programs. Yes. Kind of, in a sense, it seems for everything around the city: improve trash collection, yeah, traffic flow, emergency response, quality of life, you know, reducing violent crime, traffic congestion. I'm very curious about what that looks like in practice. How does that technology make that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I spent my career in technology, and actually we just brought a company public.
Yes, you're the scientist here, definitely, yeah, not me.
Focus on artificial intelligence. So we spent a lot of time around the issue of artificial intelligence. And I think one of the things that's really important to point out here is that artificial intelligence is really what electricity was in the 1800s. This technology is going to transform the world, our country, the city, and New York City should be leading in that. We are the perfect place to deploy a lot of these technologies. Right now, the city has about 25,000 cameras that we use to monitor traffic, to monitor all kinds of things. My plan calls for converting those cameras into what are called AI-enabled cameras that can effectively look at the city and look at garbage cans and say, oh, that garbage can in the corner in the West Village is full of trash. Let me deploy the sanitation department to go clean up that garbage. And what it does, it creates an efficiency around reporting potholes. It measures, it looks at the street and says, oh, a pothole is developing here on 42nd Avenue. Let's send somebody to go repair that pothole. So that's how you would use it from a service perspective, a sanitation, and a Department of Transportation perspective. You can also use it on code enforcement. So you can enable the cameras to look at, you know, if somebody's building something illegally or putting, you know, a shed that they shouldn't be putting in front of the sidewalk or whatever have you, and then report that from an enforcement perspective.
And the AI will also help you deploy.
And the AI would automatically, absolutely. And I'll give you a perfect example on criminality and also on crime, because this is really important. So if you recall the shooting that happened in Uptown at the NFL building that happened a couple of months ago. Well, that individual walked a couple of blocks with a gun around his shoulder. An AI camera would have picked that up immediately, would have effectively called the equivalence of the SWAT
team. I think if I'm correct, because I remember reporting on that story, he had parked right on the block of the building and walked. He walked across to get into the building. Right.
Mm-hmm. So if that camera, which by the way was connected to the city cameras, would have automatically detected that weapon, would have called the SWAT team immediately or the special response team immediately, would have sent out an automatic text to everybody around a mile radius, would have informed the security service personnel in those buildings to lock the doors, that individual would not have gotten very far. And that's one deployment of AI that can be utilized to really add
right,
safety.
That's one example. I wanted to ask, though, I think what the average person knows about AI is what we've, you know, learned from news reports and in the media. And there's a lot to suggest that AI, as it exists right now, is not that reliable, that it often comes up with wrong answers, that it often comes up with misdiagnoses, if you will. And do you think that means that now is the right time to deploy something like that citywide in a city as big as this one with outcomes that could be important?
Yeah, AI has been deployed already in places like Singapore and Dubai. You know, it's not a foreign technology. And AI is pretty darn reliable. I mean, does it make mistake? I would argue that humans make mistake, but it's a pretty reliable technology, especially around services like I mentioned the garbage, I mentioned the code enforcement, I mentioned the potholes. I mentioned automated 911. By the way, you know, right now, if you call 911, good luck getting a human being there that's gonna react quickly. You can use AI for that. I mean, we're using AI for a lot of the customer service things in businesses. We can use it for these kinds of applications. AI is more reliable than people give it credit. It's getting better by the day. The technologies are improving. It's a logarithmic growth of efficiency and performance. New York needs to lead in AI. We're well suited for that. We're the right city to deploy these kinds of technology. And further, we should use it as a platform to train, you know, the next generation of kids from Harlem and Brooklyn and the Bronx to learn this technology, because this is the future. Artificial intelligence is the future. We have to accept it. We have to embrace it. We have to lead in it. And then we have to use ethical norms and standards to make sure that we don't violate people's rights. That's a very important piece of it. But to ignore it, to cover our eyes and say, wait, let's wait till it gets better, I think we're going to miss the boat if we do that.
I have a couple more questions. We don't have a lot of time left, and there's a couple more questions I want to get in quickly, sure, if we can. We know that in this race that President Trump has said that Zoran Mamdani, who is the front runner, is not his choice for mayor of the city. And depending on who gets elected to mayor of the city will trigger certain actions by President Trump, whether it's withholding funding or what other measures he wants to take. So how would you work with him? What would President Trump's reaction be to your being elected mayor?
I said earlier, you know, I can negotiate with anybody. I do this on a daily basis. I deal with people that are meaner than Mr. Trump on a daily basis. So I can handle it. I think we have to be pragmatic. The federal government does have a lot of power over the city. It does. I mean, the reality is, the cities and states are subordinate to the federal government. That's the law. So we have to be logical about that. I think the other important piece to point out here is that the federal government supplies about $10 billion of our budget. If the spigot was to be turned off on those $10 billion overnight, which he has threatened to do, and he would likely do if Zoran is elected, I think the city would be in a deficit immediately. I think the city would have to either increase taxes immediately or raise debt to cover those $10 billion deficit. Even if he does it for a couple of weeks, it's going to be detrimental to the city. It is a very important piece that we need to address. I think, look, the reality is we don't want the National Guard on our streets. We have the NYPD that can do a good job.
So would you agree to policies like that? Would you push back on them?
I would push back, but I think, look, everything is a negotiation. You can't have this hard stance, come get me. I mean, that's ridiculous. It doesn't work. It's not going to work. I think, you know, egos are at play. And the reality is the federal government is you know, it's got a superiority in, over the cities. It's just reality. We have to accept that. And they control, they provide a lot of funding for the city. We cannot be without that funding. So we need to be practical. We need to be logical about dealing with Mr. Trump. And I know that I can do that. I'm probably the only candidate on the ballot this year that can handle Trump and can deal with Trump.
So I have one last question for you. This is your first mayoral race.
Yes.
The first time you've come into dealing with...
My first crazy endeavor.
Your first crazy endeavor. Your first time you've come into the political system, the political process. Mm-hmm. So this campaign has three front runners. So this campaign may not go the way you want it to and have the outcome that you want. And if you don't win, would you try again? Are you committed to serving the city and maybe jumping into a race again? Or was this just a very specific one-time thing that you thought you would
try? As it relates to being, not one of the front runners, I'm an immigrant. I've been in last place my whole life, and I've always figured out a way to win. So, you know, the interesting part is that when people hear my message, it resonates. I'm one of logic, and I'm a calm individual. I know how to run things. I think the city really needs somebody like me, somebody who's logical, a unifier. I don't believe in dividing the city. I believe what makes this city so great is the diversity of people. So I think the city needs somebody like me, and I'm not saying that as from a biased perspective. I'm saying from a third-party perspective, if I may do that. In terms of running, look, I did this because I really believe that this was my moment to really bring forth my ideas, bring forth the experience I've had around socialism and how scary it is for a society. I think we can't let socialism take a hold in the greatest city on earth, the capitalistic city, the city that built capitalism and built this great country. I think that's very dangerous. So I did it for those reasons. Look, I enjoy running my companies. I enjoy building companies. I enjoy building technologies and medicine to help people. That's really my passion in life. But that's not to say that I wouldn't have another calling in life that says, you know, stand up and do something great for the city or the state or this country. If I'm so honored to be called upon that, I'll think about it. But at this point, I'm focused on this mayoral race, which I think is very important and it's transformative for our country.
All right. Joseph Hernandez, independent candidate for mayor here in the city of New York. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And thank you for joining us for our latest interview in our mayoral series. I'm Linda Lopez for 1010 Wins.